took another deep breath. I had to think. I leaned down and shoved the paper into my boot. It was such a small comfort, hardly anything in the face of what awaited me if I was unsuccessful. But I had to do it. I took another piece of paper and thought, quickly, about the lesson Philip had given me. I had to make this look authentic. To my adventurous love, your brilliant eyes hold secrets that entice me. I can see in them a power and strength that sets you apart from every other man. When you look at me, my heart flutters with the knowledge that I will soon belong to you. You cannot imagine how strongly I feel about sharing my life with such a man.
Aren't you done yet? Mr. Beaufort asked.
Almost. It's my first time, you see. My voice shook a little, but I finished the letter. I hope I will be able to give you everything you deserve. Longingly, Marianne. That would have to do. It would appeal to his ego, at least. I stood and smiled shyly at him. He looked up.
Well?
I hid the penknife in the folds of my skirt with one hand and held out the letter to him with the other. He stood and grabbed it from me.
Oh, I can't watch you while you read it. It would be too embarrassing, I said. You'll have to turn around.
Aren't you a modest thing?
He said with a leering smile. I crossed the room while he bent his head over the letter. I stood near the door, not so close as to make him suspicious, but close enough to be in range if my plan worked. He turned to me with an eager light in his eyes.
You are more surprising with every moment, he said, walking toward me.
He grabbed me around the waist. I tried not to pull away. His breath reeked, and I realized it was brandy and not wine he had been drinking. He swayed slightly on his feet. I didn't know how his drunken state would factor into what I was going to do. I hoped it would help. I put one hand on his cheek, gripping the knife with my other hand. "Close your eyes," I whispered. He smiled and closed them.
"A new game? I never expected this from you."
I braced myself, held the penknife to his throat, and called on my courage. I found it lacking. I couldn't do it. I couldn't stab him like this. His hand moved from my waist to my hip, and I flinched. "If you move, I will slit your throat," I hissed. His eyes flew open, and he looked at me in shock. I stared at him with all the hatred I had in me. He moved his hand. I pressed the knife against his skin until it drew blood. "I will do it," I warned him through clenched teeth. He withdrew his hand from my body, his countenance dark with fury. I reached into his jacket and felt around until I found the pistol. I pulled it out and took a step away from him, pointing the pistol at him. My hand shook. "Now let us understand each other," I said. "I am going to leave, and you are going to disappear. If you're smart, you will leave the country as you had planned and never come back. Are we clear?" He sneered.
"Perfectly."
In one swift movement, he knocked the pistol from my hand. It skidded under the table. The next instant, his hands gripped my shoulders and he pulled me toward him. "You think I'm strong?" he whispered. "You think I'm powerful?
I'll show you what real strength is. I will show you what happens when you try to make a fool of me."
Panic gripped me, obliterating all my thoughts and plans. I twisted and turned in his grip, but he only held me tighter and pressed his vile lips against mine. I turned my head to the side and spit out the taste of his kiss. He laughed and lunged for me again. The sound of his laugh cut through my panic, clearing my thoughts enough that I remembered the penknife I still held in my hand. I stabbed blindly at his hands. He swore, and his grip loosened. I abruptly let my knees buckle, and my weight broke his hold on me. When I fell to the floor, I kicked against his knees with both feet, hard enough that he lost his balance and staggered backward against the door. I rolled to my knees and crawled quickly under the table. My hand hit something solid.
the pistol. I came out on the other side of the table, stood, and pointed the gun at him.
"Let's stop this now," I said.
He sauntered around the table toward me. I backed up, keeping the gun aimed at him. My hands started to shake, betraying the fear that raced through me. I tightened my grip.
"Stop, or I will shoot."
He smirked and said,
"You don't have it in you."
I wavered for a minute, believing him. Did I have it in me? I noticed the blood on his hands from where I had stabbed him. It was very red. My vision blurred for an instant, and I had to blink quickly. Then I saw Mr. Beaufort reaching for me. I suddenly thought I heard Philip shouting my name. It startled me so much that I squeezed the trigger. The sound was deafening in that small room. I jerked backward from the force of it. Mr. Beaufort flinched, crouched down, then stood back up and smirked harder than ever. I had missed. He reached out and grabbed the pistol from my hand. I ducked down and crawled under the table again, as fast as a crab. He grabbed at my foot, and I screamed as I kicked back and freed myself, emerging from beneath the table on the side by the door. I wrenched the door open, but was immediately knocked to the floor by a tremendous force. My head hit something hard on the way down. I gasped, rolled onto my side, and curled into myself instinctively as the room grew dark. I was so stunned, all I could do was cover my head with my hands as violent sounds erupted around me. When a hand grabbed my wrist, I fought blindly, too terrified to open my eyes and see my attacker. Through my panic, I heard a voice yell, "Marianne, open your eyes!" My terror immediately died, for it was a voice I knew as well as my own. My eyes flew open in surprise, and I saw the face of the man I loved so well. But it was raw with pain, so twisted in anguish and grief that my heart broke open at the sight. I sobbed, as if I would never be able to stop. He scooped me up in his arms as though I were a child again and held me securely against his broad chest. "You're safe now, sweetheart. I have you." I cried into my father's neck as he carried me from the room. Chapter 25. Voices surrounded me, but I could not make sense of them. I was crying too hard to make sense of anything. When my father bent over and set me on a chair, I refused to let go of him. He knelt beside me and patted my back while I buried my face in his chest. He loved me. I knew it. I knew it as soon as I saw the look in his eyes. I did not know why he was here or how he had found me, but I did not, in this moment, care. All I cared to know was that he was here, and he had found me, and that he loved me. When he asked me if I was hurt or needed a doctor, I shook my head and wiped away the tears so I could see him more clearly. We were in the tap room of the inn, but I ignored everything else around me while I took in the sight of my father's face. His hair was grayer than I remembered, and there were more wrinkles around his eyes, but he looked healthy. I had so many questions, I didn't know which one to ask first. Before I had a chance to say anything, though, the door of the inn flew open and William strode in. When his gaze landed on me, he stopped. "You found her," he said to my father, with obvious relief in his voice. "Where is the scoundrel?" My father gestured toward the parlor. "In there. Sir Philip is taking care of everything." "Sir Philip? My Sir Philip?"
"Alone?" My father nodded. "He insisted."
I looked from one to the other. I knew what this meant. My honor and reputation had been compromised when Mr. Beaufort abducted me, and now it was within my father's rights to challenge him to a duel. But it was not Philip's responsibility to risk his life for me. I could not sit by knowing what was happening in the next room. It was not a woman's place to witness a duel. But I nevertheless hurried across the taproom and pushed open the door of the parlor, intending to stop the duel immediately. I froze in the doorway. I didn't dare make a sound.
Mr. Beaufort was standing very still with his back to the fireplace. Philip stood with the tip of a sword pressed into Mr. Beaufort's throat. I saw another sword on the floor. Neither gentleman looked toward the door. Philip looked perfectly in control, his sword bending the skin of Mr. Beaufort's neck without piercing it. When he spoke, though, his voice sounded so fierce I hardly recognized it.
Tell me what you did to her.
I made sure you wouldn't want her any more.
I will always want her,
Philip said in a quiet, furious voice.
Always. There is nothing you could do to change that.
Mr. Beaufort sneered.
Then why do you want to know?
Because I would never make her say the words, and because I want to know how much I should enjoy running you through.
Stop! The word felt ripped from me. Both men looked at me. I nearly started sobbing again at Philip's expression, for it matched my father's. I turned my gaze to Mr. Beaufort, because I couldn't bear to look at Philip. I walked toward them, trembling so much that I had to clench my hands into fists. "He's a liar," I said, stopping next to Philip. "I will not allow him to ruin me in reputation after I kept him from ruining me in truth. He did nothing but kiss me." I lifted my chin and thought of how disdainful Grandmother would look. I hoped I looked just like her. And it wasn't even a good kiss. It was vile, but it was all he did. Mr. Beaufort's face turned dark red, and he looked as if he would love nothing more than to have his hands around my neck. But after a moment, he dropped his sullen gaze in a gesture of defeat. I wanted to laugh with triumph, but I was afraid I might end up crying instead. I looked up at Philip. Even if he does deserve to be run through, I don't want his death on my conscience. Just hurt him a little, if you please, to remind him of this night. Philip looked at me for a long moment. There were so many emotions in his eyes that I couldn't begin to decipher them all.
"He kissed you?"
Anger threaded through his voice. I nodded. His gaze rested on my mouth. The look of leashed fire returned, as if Philip was barely holding his passions in check. I couldn't help noticing that he looked very handsome with that flash of danger in his eyes. With hardly a glance at Mr. Beaufort, Philip flicked his wrist, his sword moving so fast that there was just a blur of steel, and then a dark red line appeared on Mr. Beaufort's face, drawn from his chin, through his lips, to the side of his nose. He swore and pressed the cuff of his sleeve to his mouth. The lace immediately turned crimson. I stared, a little appalled at what I had caused.
"Is that sufficient?" Philip asked me.
And I saw, over everything else waging for dominance within his eyes, a gleam of admiration.
"Yes. Now can you make sure he leaves the country?"
"I will. Is there anything else you want?"
He was smiling now, smiling into my eyes, as if I held the whole universe in my hands. I was close enough to see everything, and I discovered in his eyes and in his smile that Philip had his own secret. One that was shining so brightly as sunlight over water, that I caught my breath, dazzled by the brightness. Just as I had been sure of my father's love when I had looked into his eyes, I was sure of something else in this moment. I was certain that Philip cared for me. It was so obvious in his eyes, in the warmth of his smile, in the way he looked at me, and the way he fought Mr. Beaufort to defend me. Philip cared for me. I could not say whether or not he was in love with me, but I was certain that the friendship I had treasured so much was real. A slow smile curled across my lips. Yes, there was still so much that I wanted from Philip. But I only said, "That will do for now." Philip and William left to escort Mr. Beaufort onto his ship. I gathered they would also talk to the innkeeper and help him remember the events of the night differently, and there would probably be some cost associated with the damage I caused from the bullet I had fired. On top of all of that, my head throbbed from when I had been knocked to the ground, but none of that mattered right now. I sat in the tap room with my father and took advantage of the quiet to discover some answers.
"Papa, I am so happy you've come back to England. But tell me, what has brought you home now? Has something happened? Is grandmother?"
"No, no, nothing has happened."
He patted my hand.
"I should have come home long ago."
He drew in a breath, and his eyes crinkled with worry. "Is it true that you hated Bath?" I blinked back tears, nodding because I couldn't speak.
"I'm so sorry. I only stayed away so you would have opportunities to get out in society, to meet other young people, and have a chance at a good marriage. I had hoped you were enjoying yourself."
I leaned my head against his shoulder. "I don't care for society. I want to take care of you." It was only right, now that Mama was gone, for me to run the household and see to my father's comfort.
"Your heart is in the right place, but before long you would have realized that your years of opportunity were gone. I would hate to be the cause of your losing a chance for future happiness. I had no idea until Sir Philip told me how unhappy you were."
I lifted my head to look at him. "Sir Philip? What does he have to do with this?"
"He arrived a few days ago, quite out of the blue. He gave me your letter and said that he was determined to bring me back so that you could go home. He can be very persuasive, can't he?" "Of course, I didn't need to be persuaded once I read your letter."
Philip had gone to France? For me? I could hardly believe it. "But how did you know I was here, and that I was in danger?"
"It was the greatest coincidence. We had just arrived, and were on our way to find an inn, when we crossed paths with Mr. Wyndham and his groom, who had followed you here after someone informed him of your abduction. There was no time for more explanation. We split up to check the different inns."
He rubbed a hand over his face.
"When we heard the gunshot, and then your scream, I feared the worst."
He exhaled a shaky sigh.
"I am so relieved we found you. What would I have done if something had happened to you?"
Papa pulled me close and kissed the top of my head.
"You are my raison d'être."
I was his reason for living? I felt as if I was a cup filled to overflowing. One more drop of joy and my soul would spill right out of me.
"You must believe that I would have come back at any time," he said. "All you had to do was ask. And no, Annie, I never blamed you for your mother's death. Never, my dear. Never."
I leaned my head against my father's shoulder and let my tears run freely. I had kept my heart so tightly contained for so long now that I couldn't seem to stop the emotions that poured from it. Oh, but they were healing emotions. With each beat, my heart was growing stronger than it had been in a year. By the time William and Philip returned, my father's shoulder was damp from my tears. But I was happy. They told us that everything was taken care of and that we could leave right away. William would return with his groom in the phaeton he had driven, and Philip would join my father and me in a carriage they had hired to take us back to Edenbrook. I thanked them for rescuing me, and they both waved it off as if it was just one of many heroic things they did every day. It was dark when we left the inn. I sat in the carriage beside my father with Philip across from us. For a fleeting moment, I wished I was sitting next to Philip. Then I berated myself for my lack of loyalty and decided to be happy to have my father next to me. There was so much that I still wanted to talk to my father about. He would surely laugh at my report about Mr. Whittles and his poetry. And there were things I wanted to ask him about France and how he had spent the past year. But Papa seemed very tired. He yawned several times while he and Philip were exchanging some casual remarks. After a few minutes, silence settled over us, and Papa leaned his head against the back of his seat. I looked out the window and watched the moon travel with us. Another inn, another moon, another carriage ride.
But everything was different now. I was different now. I was changed irrevocably, and it was a change for the better. I felt it in the strength of my heart. Soon snores came from my father. I couldn't sleep. My mind was too busy thinking about everything I had learned this evening. I repeated to myself the words Philip had said to Mr. Beaufort about how he would always want me. They fell on my tender heart like drops of balm, feeding my hope. Philip sat across from my father, and I could see nothing of him in the darkness of the carriage. But I knew he was awake because I felt his gaze on me. And then, just when I thought we would spend the carriage ride in silence, he spoke in a quiet voice from across the darkness.
"Are you certain he didn't hurt you?"
I shivered as the sound of his voice washed over me. "Yes, I'm certain." I heard him sigh and settle back in his seat. Then he spoke again.
"Will you tell me what happened?"
So I did. I told him everything from Mr. Beaufort's proposal to the love letter I wrote at the inn to firing the pistol. Philip listened to it all, but I felt him growing tense, and at one point I heard him swear under his breath. At the end of my story he was quiet, and I strained to see his expression, but it was in vain. The dark blanketed us. Talking like this, in the dark, with only words to connect us, felt as strange and intimate as watching Philip write that love letter. After a long moment, Philip asked,
"Why did you never tell me about your inheritance?"
The question surprised me. When I told him about the events of the night, I hadn't realized that I would be telling him about my inheritance as well. I hesitated, trying to find the right words. "My grandmother warned me not to, and besides, I haven't actually earned the inheritance. I have to prove myself as an elegant lady to my grandmother, and I doubt that will happen." I paused. "But would it have made a difference if you had known?"
"No," he answered decisively and immediately. "But I still wish I had."
"Why?"
"So that I could promise not to love you for your money," he said, and I heard a smile in his voice.
That day in the library, when we made those promises to each other, felt like a lifetime ago. I smiled at the memory. "Well, it's not too late." Philip chuckled, and a thrill of pleasure rolled down my spine. How I loved the sound of his laugh! And then I realized what had made him laugh. I had flirted with him. I had never flirted with Philip before. Not once until tonight.
"I promise, Marianne Daventry," he began.
His voice was serious and sultry at the same time, and my heart skipped in my chest.
"I promise that I do not love you for your money."
A shock shuddered through me. I could not miss the change in his wording, nor the depth to his voice. Did he mean that he loved me? Did he love me? It was not a declaration, and Philip had always been an outrageous flirt. But just as I was ready to dismiss his words, along with all of his other flirtatious comments, I remembered something he had said to me during our love letter lesson.
"I am always serious when it comes to matters of the heart."
Could he be serious now? Rachel's advice to encourage him came to my mind, making my heart skip with nervousness. I did not know how to encourage a man to declare himself. I didn't even know if Philip had anything to declare. What if my attempt to encourage him sounded as awkward as I felt? My father shifted beside me, mumbling something in his sleep, and I started a little. I had forgotten for a moment that he was sitting next to me. His distraction served as a timely reminder that this was neither the time nor the place for an important personal conversation with Philip. My father could awake at any moment. So I sighed and gave up the thought of learning anything about Philip's heart or intentions tonight. I would have to wait a little longer. But there was something I still needed to say to Philip. "Thank you for bringing my father home,"
It was very generous of you to go all the way to France for me. I paused, then said with a smile, I suppose I will have to give you the painting now. Philip chuckled lightly. No, I have something better in mind for the painting. I waited for more, but he stayed mysteriously silent. Philip had always enjoyed his secrets. Why did you bring him home then? I asked. Because you wanted him. The statement was so simple, but it spoke volumes about Philip's intentions. I closed my eyes and smiled as the hope inside of me grew ever brighter.
You should try to rest, Philip said. You've been through a lot tonight. I won't keep you awake.
I was too tired and my heart too tender to say anything more. So I rested my head against the window and allowed myself to hope while the horses carried us across a moonlit world. Chapter 26.
When we finally arrived at Edenbrook, I stumbled upstairs in an exhausted daze. The night sky was just beginning to lighten toward dawn when I dropped into bed. I didn't bother to undress or even take off my boots. I awoke hours later to the sound of Betsy trying to wake me without actually shaking me awake. She was moving about the room, rattling my cup of chocolate on the tray she carried, bumping into furniture and whistling. I was still tired, but I could see there would be no putting her off. I turned toward the window and the afternoon sunlight that streamed through it. When Betsy saw me stir, she nearly dropped the tray on top of me in her haste to set it down.
"Oh, I am so glad you're finally awake!"
She threw herself on my bed. "I have been so impatient to know what happened yesterday. You wouldn't believe the uproar that happened here when Mr. Clumpet came stumbling into the house, claiming you had been abducted." I sat up and reached for my cup of chocolate.
"Mr. Clumpet? How was he involved?"
"He said he was looking for insects in the woods when he heard shouting and saw a man throw you into a carriage. He tried to run after you, but he tripped over a tree root and twisted his ankle. He did, however, hear Mr. Beaufort say something about Dover. It took Mr. Clumpet half an hour to limp back to the house with his bad ankle and tell Mr. Windham what had happened. I can't even describe how exciting it was. I vow, I nearly swooned when Lady Caroline gave Mr. Windham the dueling sword to take with him. Now I have to hear what happened, or I shall die of suspense." I told her all of it, from Mr. Beaufort's arrival in the orchard to Philip's duel.
"He fought a duel for you?"
She clasped her hands together.
"Was it horribly romantic?"
I thought I should discourage her romantic fancies, but after a brief struggle, I gave up and smiled. "Yes," I admitted, "it was." She squealed.
"I knew it. I knew he was the one for you. I don't care what you say about Miss Cecily. It's you he loves, and that means I will get to be a lady's maid."
She looked as if she was about to go into raptures. I had to stop her. "Betsy, nothing happened between Sir Philip and me, so don't start planning your future life here." She waved aside my words.
"Nothing has happened yet. But something will, I'm sure of it. Oh, I'll make you look so beautiful for the ball tonight that he won't be able to restrain himself any longer."
My feelings wavered between nervousness and excitement, hope and doubt. I had to agree with Betsy. Something would happen tonight. I felt it. I asked Betsy to draw a bath for me and then stood up and stretched. I noticed my boots by the side of the bed, but I couldn't remember taking them off.
"Betsy, did you take off my boots?"
I asked when she came back to tell me that the water was being readied.
"Yes, earlier this morning when I checked on you. I thought you would be more comfortable without them."
I stared at the boots, and a warning went off in my head. There was something important about them that I had to remember. I gasped when I recalled that it was
the letter I had written to Philip at the inn last night. I lunged for the boots and turned them upside down. There was nothing.
"Did you find a piece of paper when you took off my boots?" I asked.
"You mean the letter addressed to Sir Philip?"
"Yes, I saw it."
Dread filled me.
"What did you do with it?"
"I set it down right there on your table."
She picked up the tray she had put there, but there was no note underneath. I searched all over, even checking the bottom of the tray, then the floor, and under the bed, and even in the bed. The letter was nowhere to be found.
"We have to find it, Betsy," I yelled in utter panic.
My letter was a declaration of love, and if Philip read it, it would ruin everything. A woman never declared her feelings first. Never. What if he had no intention of offering for me, and then he read my letter and felt obligated to? What if he had only been flirting when he had made me that promise in the carriage last night? I sunk to the floor, head in my hands, and groaned with embarrassment. I would never live this down if he read that letter. Never. A knock sounded at the door. A moment later, Cecily rushed in and threw herself at me.
"Oh, you're safe! I've been so worried about you!"
She hugged me tightly, then pulled away and held me by the shoulders.
"Did he hurt you?"
I shook my head and tried to smile. "No, I'm fine." She mustn't know about that letter either. She mustn't think I would ever willingly betray her by throwing myself at the man she loved.
"I can't believe it," she said. "To think of the peril you were in. I should have never left you alone. You must have been so frightened. You have to tell me all about it."
She took my hand and pulled me to my feet. She seemed determined to not let me go. We sat on my bed, and Cecily listened with wide eyes while I told her almost everything that had happened. I left out a few important details, like what Philip had said to Mr. Beaufort about always wanting me. I kept those words close to my heart like a sacred treasure. Cecily insisted on feeling responsible for my kidnapping and vowed to me to be a better sister and to never leave me alone again. I felt so happy and so guilty at the same time. She couldn't guess that I was in love with the man she hoped to marry. I was a bundle of nerves by the time Betsy finished my hair and proclaimed me ready for the ball. The letter had not turned up, even though she had asked among the other servants if they had seen it. I blushed with embarrassment every time I thought about that letter ending up in the wrong hands, or even the right hands. I stood and regarded myself in the mirror. My cheeks were rosy, thanks to my state of embarrassment and nervousness. I smoothed my hands down the front of my white muslin gown. Betsy had cut miniature white roses from the garden and pinned them among my curls. Taking a deep breath, I turned toward the door and this fateful evening. Pausing at the top of the stairs, I surveyed the scene below me. Papa stood in the foyer, talking to Lady Caroline. Louisa and Cecily were whispering to each other, their heads bent together. Mr. and Mrs. Clumpet stood near William, and they appeared to be talking animatedly about something. Judging from the motions Mr. Clumpet was making, I guessed it had to do with birds. I noticed he was using a walking cane tonight, but appeared to be in good spirits. And away from the others, near the door to the drawing room, stood Rachel and Philip. Rachel appeared to be talking to him in a low voice, for he had his head bent as if listening closely. She glanced up and saw me, then said one more thing to Philip. He turned and met my gaze. He looked more handsome than any man had a right to look. He walked to the bottom of the staircase and smiled up at me. The evening had begun. Philip's attention made me so nervous, I had to grip the railing tightly to ensure I did not trip and fall down the stairs. He did not pull his gaze away from me the whole time I descended the staircase. When I reached the last step, Philip held out his hand to me. I put my hand in his.
"I didn't think it was possible,"
he said in a low voice.
but you look more beautiful than ever tonight."
My heart skittered.
"Thank you,"
I said, feeling breathless. He lifted an eyebrow in a look of surprise.
"Thank you? Have you learned to accept compliments, Marianne?"
I tried to suppress a smile without success. Feeling a little proud of myself, I said, "I suppose I have." Philip looked down at my hand, which he was still holding, and smiled as if at a secret thought. Then he bowed his head and brushed his lips across the back of my hand. A shock raced up my arm all the way to my heart and set it pounding.
"I am glad to know it,"
Philip murmured, looking up at me through his eyelashes. Oh my, I had seen this look before, the night of the last ball. This was the smoldering, determined look that Philip had used on me when we had danced together. This was the look that had disassembled all of my defenses. I gripped the banister with my free hand, feeling as if my legs could not hold me. My father walked toward us just then, saving me from the disgrace of falling at Philip's feet from a severe case of weakened knees.
"You look lovely, my dear,"
he said, as Philip released my hand and stepped aside. I was grateful for my father's interruption, for it brought clarity back to my thoughts, and I remembered I was still missing a very embarrassing letter. Betsy had promised to keep looking for it and to notify me as soon as she found it. I hoped that she found it soon, for it had a chance to be read or, heaven forbid, delivered. When people began to arrive, I stood next to Cecily in the foyer and greeted the guests along with Philip and Lady Caroline, since the ball was held in our honor. Cecily looked like an angel, with her golden hair shining in the candlelight. She squeezed my hand and smiled at me, excitement glittering in her blue eyes. I could hardly focus on the guests who flowed through the foyer, as I was so preoccupied with wondering about that letter. I did notice Mr. Kellett, though, because he was the only person who smirked at me. He kissed Cecily's hand and said something in her ear that made her blush and giggle. I gave her a reproving look, but she appeared not to notice. "What did Mr. Kellett say to you?" I asked. She smiled secretively. "I doubt you want to know." Remembering her comment about his kissing, I agreed with her. She looked sideways at me. "Sir Philip looks very handsome tonight, does he not?" "To be sure." I tried to make my voice sound breezy, but I felt my cheeks grow warm. My blush was sure to give me away if Cecily ever paid attention to it. "I suppose you will want to dance with him first."
"No, I think you should."
I looked at her with surprise. "I thought you had a plan for tonight." Her secretive smile appeared again.
"I do."
Before I realized it, the musicians were warming up and Lady Caroline was telling us it was time to take our places in the ballroom. The ballroom was crowded and noisy. I could hardly say a word to Philip during our country dance, which was just as well, since I was so busy worrying about that missing letter that I would have had a hard time concentrating on a conversation. Glancing down the line of couples, I saw Cecily dancing with Mr. Kellett, and she seemed to be enjoying herself immensely. When the dance ended, I reluctantly accepted the hand of my next partner, while Philip bowed and walked away. I saw him throughout the ball, dancing with various ladies. There he was with Miss Grace, her mother watching from the side with a hawkish look in her eager eyes. There he was dancing with his mother like a dutiful son. And all too soon he was dancing with Cecily. When the musicians paused for a rest, some of the guests drifted out of the hot ballroom through the French doors and onto the cool terrace. I watched Cecily and Philip from across the room. They stood close together. He bent his head to her as she whispered something in his ear. I could see his surprise even from a distance. I wondered what she had said to him. Then she whispered something else, and he offered her his arm. They left the ballroom together, but they did not follow the other couples onto the terrace. With a surge of jealousy, I wondered where she was taking him and what she would do with him.
I forgot completely about the earlier benevolent feelings I had towards Cecily. I wanted to scratch her eyes out.
Someone tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and was surprised to see Louisa.
"I need to speak with you," she said.
She never wanted to speak with me.
"About what?"
"Just come with me."
I followed her out of the ballroom and through the throngs of guests. She grabbed my elbow and pulled me into the hall that led to the library. It was quiet here, and she stopped just outside of the library doors and turned to me.
"I know about the letter," she said, "the one you wrote to Philip."
My heart fell. "No, no, no, no."
"I don't know what you mean," I lied.
She rolled her eyes.
"Yes, you do."
Louisa had never been my friend. She was Cecily's friend, and clearly she wanted Cecily for a sister, not me.
"I want to know if you meant it," she said. "Do you really feel that way toward Philip? Or was it something you wrote because you were in a desperate situation?"
My face was on fire. I felt like I was choking.
"Why do you care if I meant it or not?"
She stepped closer.
"Because I care about my brother, and he's in the library right now reading your letter. So, if you didn't mean it, you had better tell me now before you break his heart."
I stared at her in dismay while my heart threatened to stop.
"He's reading it? Right now?"
Panic streamed through me. I wanted to run away. I had declared my love in that letter, but I had no assurance that Philip felt the same way toward me. It was beyond forward. It was unheard of, and I was going to die from the shame of it all. A smile lifted Louisa's lips.
"You meant it."
She tapped on the library door. Cecily opened it and stood in the doorway smiling at me.
"There you are."
She grabbed my arm, pulled me inside, and walked out, shutting the door behind her. The room was dark except for a low fire burning in the fireplace and the moon shining through the large window at the other end of the room. Philip was standing next to the fireplace, with one shoulder leaning against the mantel and his head bent over a piece of paper. He looked up when the door closed, but the room was too dark for me to see his expression. My heart was pounding so hard that I pressed a hand to my chest to keep it from bursting through my skin. Philip was looking at me from across the dim room with that condemning letter in his hand, and he wasn't moving or saying a word. We both stood there, as if on the brink of a cliff, and I didn't know if I moved, if I would fall to hell or soar to heaven. Then he finally spoke.
"Did you mean this?"
My heart was in my throat. Here I stood, between something and nothing. I could answer either way. But my heart was stronger than it had been in months, and it was begging me to hope, to believe, to take a chance. So I stepped toward him, a step toward something, and whispered, "Yes." Philip moved. The firelight shone on his features for a split second, and I saw everything. That day I had watched him fence with William, I had been surprised to see how impassioned he looked, as if he was leashed fire. Now, by the light of the fire, I saw the leash snap. He crossed the room to me and grabbed me by the shoulders. In three steps, he had me backed up against a bookcase. Before I could do more than catch my breath, he took my face in his hands and kissed me. I had never really been kissed before, but I did not need experience to know that Philip's kiss was, in a word, devastating. His lips were firm and insistent, gentle and caressing. His fingers threaded in my hair, holding my head exactly how he wanted it while he kissed me one way, then another, until I trembled in his arms. And then it finally occurred to me that Philip was kissing me. Philip was kissing me, and I was doing nothing about it. I quickly remedied that situation, sliding my hands up his chest, over his shoulders, burying my fingers in his hair.
His arms surrounded me, pulling me close, holding me as if I was infinitely precious. I burned and trembled in his embrace. And then, just when I was sure that Philip's kiss could not get better, it slowed and softened and became achingly tender. His gentleness tugged at my heartstrings until I was completely undone. My heart broke open and quiet tears streamed down my cheeks. I tasted the salt of my tears on Philip's lips. He pulled away from me, just enough to rest his forehead against mine. His breath came as quickly as mine did, and through his shirt I could feel his heart pounding. A slow smile curled my lips.
"How could you not know?"
His voice was throaty and a little shaky.
"How could you not know that there is nothing in the world I want as much as you?"
I shook my head in wonder. It was all too much to believe. "It seemed too remarkable," I said, "for you to love me instead of Cecily. And then I heard you, in the fencing room, tell William you would do anything to be rid of me." Philip groaned and pulled away to look into my eyes.
"Is that why you were so angry the night of the ball?"
I nodded.
"I wanted you out of my home, away from your sister, and free of the constraints of my honor. But I never wanted to be rid of you," he said. "I was going to follow you. I would follow you anywhere and court you as I wasn't free to court you here. But then, when your maid gave me that letter to your father, I thought following you to your own home might be the best solution. I had no hope."
He bent his head to mine and kissed me again as if he couldn't help himself.
"I had no hope, darling, that I had already won you."
"How could you doubt that?" I asked. I couldn't imagine not falling in love with Philip.
"Very easily. Every time I attempted to woo you, you either scolded at me or laughed or ran away, or you told me you only cared about me as a friend."
I smiled sheepishly. That was exactly what I had done. There was so much to explain to him, about my heart and my fears and my loyalty toward Cecily. But all that could wait for another time. For now, I said, I was very confused and rather blind, I think. He cupped my face in his hands.
"Then listen to me, my blind, stubborn, darling friend. You stole my heart the night we met, when you sang that ridiculous song and dared me not to laugh. And every moment I have spent with you since then, you have stolen more and more of me, until when you're not with me..."
He drew in a breath.
"When you are not with me, I am left with nothing but longing for you."
My heart swelled until I felt as if it might take over my entire being. I had landed in heaven. This was heaven.
"I tried to tell you," he said. "So many times I came close. I even wrote that love letter, hoping you would know it was for you."
I thought of the beautiful words he had written, and which I had torn up. "Will you write me that love letter again?" He pulled me close.
"I will. I'll write you dozens of love letters, hundreds if you want them."
I do want them. I wanted everything I could get from Philip. But this seemed too wonderful to be true. Even now, with all the evidence I had of Philip's sincerity, I couldn't help wondering why, out of all of the ladies he could have chosen, he had fallen in love with me. "But are you certain you want me?" I asked. "I am not elegant or accomplished, and I always do the most embarrassing things." He stopped me.
"You don't know yourself, but I do. So I will tell you what you are, Marianne Daventry."
He looked intently into my eyes, as though he would write the words on my heart if he could.
"You are bright and fun and delightfully unexpected. You are brave and compassionate and selfless, and you are lovely beyond measure. I want you, all of you, just the way you are."
He drew in a breath.
"If you will have me."
Something happened to me in that moment. Doubt was banished and hope became certainty. It overwhelmed me, and I found myself laughing and crying at once. I was clearly unraveled, but Philip did not seem to mind at all. He wiped my tears, and he kissed me again and again, and whispered things too sublime to repeat, until I was thoroughly convinced he was madly in love with me, Marianne Daventry, a girl with no great figure, too many freckles, and a propensity for twirling. And then I knew I had met my match. Chapter 27. Much later, after I had pulled myself out of Philip's embrace and Betsy had fixed the damage he had done to my hair, I found Cecily on the terrace. She smiled at me as I walked toward her.
"I hope you don't mind that I read your letter," she said. "I went to your room this morning while you were still asleep and saw it on your table. I confess, I couldn't contain my curiosity."
"I don't mind, considering how everything has turned out." She took my hand.
"I hope you're very happy."
"I am," I sighed, unable to restrain my smile. I wondered if she could tell that I had just been thoroughly kissed. "But Cecily, I'm sorry if it comes at the cost of your happiness." She waved a hand in the air.
"There are plenty of other wealthy gentlemen for me to choose from, and, to be perfectly honest, I knew Philip wasn't interested in me. I saw that as soon as I arrived. There is no scheming that can help a lady's cause when the man is in love with someone else. What I didn't see, though, was how you felt."
She looked seriously at me.
"Why didn't you tell me?"
I shrugged. "You said you were in love with him."
"Yes, I did say that. But I think I must have been very self-centered not to recognize your feelings. I'm sorry if I wasn't the kind of sister you deserved."
She gripped my hand. We stood in silence, listening to the strains of music floating through the ballroom windows. I thought of my fairy tale childhood with my twin sister. There once were two girls born to parents who had wished dearly for a child. The girls were the sun and the moon to them. I had spent my life being the moon, reflecting Cecily's light and allowing her to shine. But here, with Philip, I was the sun. I couldn't imagine a better beginning to the rest of my life.
"I hope we will always be close," I said, thinking of my mother and Lady Caroline. "Of course we will be."
She pulled me to her and we hugged. I held her until she pulled away. Looking over my shoulder, she said,
"I have someone I need to talk to."
I turned and saw Mr. Kellett standing at the edge of the terrace.
"What are you going to say to him?"
She bit her lip.
"I'm not sure, but it may take a while."
She flashed me a sly smile before she walked away. Mr. Kellett disappeared around the corner of the house, and she followed him. I was the last one to enter the dining room for breakfast the next morning. Philip and William and my father all stood at my entrance. In Philip's eyes was such a look of warm affection that I blushed to have everyone see it. As I sat down, I noticed the stares of everyone present, and then Rachel suddenly said,
"Oh, have you two finally worked everything out? Thank goodness! Now we can all talk openly."
Philip chuckled, and I blushed even harder. Every person in the room, from Lady Caroline to the footman standing behind Philip, smiled. Louisa's smile was more tentative than the others, but I was happy to see any sign of friendliness from her. I was also happy to see Cecily there, and not off somewhere in Mr. Kellett's arms. I would not put it past him to run off with her, but Cecily had more sense than that, it seemed. Congratulations were offered, and Rachel and Lady Caroline began discussing the glorious task of planning a wedding. Philip, I discovered, had already spoken to my father, who looked very happy as he smiled at me from across the table. My home was only one county away from here, which meant we would be close enough to visit as often as we wished. Cecily would return to London and our cousin Edith, where she could enjoy the diversions of town life. A footman appeared at my side with a letter on a silver salver. It was from Grandmother. I opened it and read it over my breakfast.
Dear Marianne, you little ninny,
of course I sent you to stay at Edenbrook, and you should be thanking me instead of calling me to repentance. A rich heiress needs a man to protect her, and how else could I be sure of your protection while your father was away? I only kept it a secret because I knew you would not go if you suspected the truth. Silly girl. You were fortunate that Sir Philip was willing to take on the assignment of protecting you while you were living there. By the way, I have heard from Lady Caroline that Sir Philip is besotted with you. He must not mind the way you run wild like a farmer's brat. If you manage to make such an advantageous match, I suppose I will leave you my fortune, whether or not you ever become an elegant young lady. I look forward to meeting him, and I think I may even come to Edenbrook to see you married. Sincerely, Grandmother. P.S. Mr. Whittles has offered for Amelia, and she has accepted him. I suspect this is your doing? I breathed a sigh of relief. My meddling had worked, and thinking of what my grandmother had written about Philip's assignment, an idea suddenly occurred to me. I looked across the table at Philip's aunt and uncle. Mr. Clumpet had a book propped open in front of his plate, and Mrs. Clumpet was smiling as Lady Caroline talked about the success of the ball. I turned to Philip. Did you ask Mr. Clumpet to protect me while you and William were gone?
I did. Why?
I smiled. He has been miserable here with your disorganized library, you know, and Mrs. Clumpet has missed her birds. Philip laughed.
Well, they will be free to go home now to their own library and birds. I will have to look for some books on India to send him as thanks for protecting you so well while I was gone. I can't imagine what would have happened if he hadn't been wandering through the woods that day.
I glanced at the Clumpets again, reminding myself to thank them for all they had done for me, both of them. I reread my grandmother's letter and realized with a deep sense of contentment that I had not had to change at all in order to have every hope for happiness in life. I had not had to learn to sing for company or to behave like Cecily or to stop twirling. I could be myself and be loved deeply. I was, in fact, a lot like Meg, who had always been a racehorse. I just hadn't known it. After breakfast, I escaped to the orchard. I was so happy to be here that I felt the same way I had upon arriving at Edenbrook, as if I had come home to paradise. Mixed with the feeling of homecoming was the great surge of joy I felt about my future with Philip. I closed my eyes and tipped back my head and felt the sun warm my face and head and outstretched arms. And then I did it. I twirled and twirled with my eyes closed and my head back and my arms outstretched. I suddenly heard a crunch of branches and felt a scratch on my cheek. I stopped moving and opened my eyes to find myself within an inch of having my eye poked out by a branch. I tried to move away from the branch, but found my hair was stuck. Oh, when would I ever learn not to twirl? I pulled at the branch without success. I tried to untangle my hair, but I could tell I was making a huge mess of it as more of it got tangled. In frustration and with aching arms, I said, "Oh, drat!" I heard a rustle of leaves and looked toward the sound. Philip ducked beneath a tree limb and walked toward me. I blushed hard and wished I was not attached to this tree. But I had to stand and wait while he walked toward me, looking so well put together I couldn't imagine him ever being caught doing something as embarrassing as being stuck in a tree. Why hadn't I learned my lesson the last time? "Don't laugh," I told him, noticing the amusement building in his eyes. His eyes darted to the branch and my tangled hair, and his lips twitched.
How did this happen?
I was twirling. I could tell Philip was working hard to keep back a laugh.